My phrase of the week was
the jerk behind his navel.
Who was the jerk behind his navel? Read Priori Incantatum to find out.
Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 34, Priori Incantatum.
Priori Incantatum.
Priori.
Priori.
Incantatum. Priori Incantatum.
Incantatum.
Prickerkatickatum.
Ink. Incantatum.
Ink and atum.
Priori Incantatum.
You know what struck me about Priori Incantatum? I was struck by something.
Were ya?
Their wands connect with beautiful golden light, and then they're lifted off the ground and then set right back down, like 10 feet away from where they were originally. I don't know why that...
I mean, it's pretty cool that it's like, oh, the wands connect and we lift off the ground, but like they could have stayed up there and it would have been cooler maybe or something. I don't know, but just to like lift up and go back down. And then the Death Eaters just make a new circle. It's like, It was cool, but I don't know what the point was.
There was a big grave in the way of what was about to happen. The Priori Incantatum guardians are very concerned with how everything is. They're like they're interior designers on the side when nobody's wands are connecting. So they're very concerned with the layout of things.
I suppose that the lifting up and down part is no more or less arbitrary than the golden beams of light and the dome and the Phoenix Song, but those at least were like cool things that just sounded real neat, whereas I don't know what lifting up and down did.
And why only once? I mean, that's not a very good ride. The main thing that struck me about the big golden dome and the Phoenix Song filling the air and the ghostly after images of the dead people, I guess it's not really out of place in a bad way or anything, but it's just so crazy and fantastical, and I don't really feel like there's been anything that's been fantastical in that kind of way, like, because it's just like, particularly since at the time we don't know what the fuck is happening, so it's just crazy, magical, like, boo, it's all mysterious and beautiful and wonderful. And it's more neat and weird than regular, like, mechanical magic that we normally see.
I think it fits in with, like, Phoenix Song and the Mirror of Erised and that kind of thing. Like Phoenix Tears, rather. These weird magical effects that are sort of more mysterious in a way than just a spell being cast, than just a swish and a flick.
I guess just the whole thing here, the whole big scene that the Priori Incantatum makes, it seems like something even from like a Disney movie, just like a classic animated Disney movie where there's just magic and crazy stuff happens because magic magicians can make amazing things happen. And usually, like most of the time we encounter magic, we have some semblance of what's going on. And it's kind of cool that we don't know what's going on right now, even though we get something of an explanation later on.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. She was explaining, you know, like the golden beam connecting the wands, and there were the beads along the beam, and they were pushing the beads back and forth. But I don't know, I thought that was cool. Like, it was a little bit strange, her whole explanation of these beads on the beam, and that was a little clunky, I feel like, but I feel like it worked because it just got to a point where it was just like Harry just knew that he just had to just like willpower this thing to happen. I think it was worth it because it got to that point where it was just like Harry knew that it was just like his like willpower against Voldemort's, and he had to just make sure that he had the upper hand and he was the one pushing the beads back at Voldemort, and it worked. And I thought that was cool that it, like, for all of the weird fantasticalness of it, it all sort of came down to Harry just like needing to out-willpower Voldemort.
This chapter should have been called The Beads and the Beam, or Bead and Beam.
Beaded Beam.
Maybe after that whole ordeal was over, you know, and Voldemort's dead and everything, Harry figures out that the secret to immortality was not, as Voldemort thought, to create your own Horcruxes, but was actually just to have a Horcrux inside you. And so he just got somebody who would, maybe was just like a huge Harry Potter fan, or maybe it was like Ron, just somebody.
No, I think that's the same thing, Ron.
Ron is a huge Harry Potter fan.
He just asked Ron to murder someone and to put his soul into Harry Potter so that if, God forbid, anybody ever AKs Harry Potter, Potter again. He'll just go right back to and have a nice little chat with Dumbledore for a couple minutes and come right back.
For that matter, when Harry Potter was Avada Kedavra as a baby, he lived, obviously, because he is the boy who lived. But we don't know what was entailed in that, because he got hit with the curse and he lived because of his mother's sacrifice. But did he briefly get to go to King's Cross then too? Maybe just every time you're hit with Avada Kedavra, that's the rule. You get to go to King's Cross for a little bit and come back.
Who would a baby want to meet? Like Barney or somebody?
Mickey Mouse?
Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny? The Tooth Fairy? All of them.
That'd be fun.
The only thing I can think of when that would have been implied was Ollivander saying, the phoenix who gave the tail feather gave just one other.
Which, yeah, that's what I was referring to, yeah.
He might have just been being dramatic there. But I mean, that was always the implication that I got, was that, you know, there's unicorns somewhere where they just chop off the whole tail and use them in hundreds of wands.
That sounds like...
That sounds horrible, Peter.
Well, yeah, exactly. That sounds like something some second-rate wand maker like a Grigorovich maybe would stoop to.
I'm not condoning that. I'm just saying it probably happens.
Exactly. No, it probably happens, but the fact that Ollivander said, this phoenix only ever gave two tail feathers, that just implies to me that, like, he treats these animals, the dragons who give their heartstrings, whatever that is, and the phoenixes who give their tail feathers, and the unicorns who give their... Is it just a hair? Is it specifically a tail hair?
I think so.
Anyway, it implies that Ollivander treats these animals very specially, and that he has this like gift for like soothing them. And then like, even though they don't necessarily understand what he's saying, he has this way of communicating with them. And then they gift him with a thing because they know that he's going to do something important with it. And that sounds very beautiful. And I need to go read some Ollivander fan fiction as soon as we're done here.
In the original edition of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, when the Priori Incantatum effect occurs, the general idea is that it regurgitates the spells that it did in reverse order, so all of Voldemort's murder victims come out in reverse order of when they were killed. However, Harry's father comes out before his mother, which would seem to suggest that his father was killed after his mother was killed, which, as we all know, is just a pile of baloney. So further editions of the book change it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that his mother comes out first. Well, not first, but prior to his father.
That is correct, Mr. Tom. That would have been kind of cool, though, if the original text with the error had been the intended text, and then we had found out there was more to the story or something, like the official story from the ministry that James was murdered, and then Lily was murdered, and then Harry was not murdered.
Was that from the ministry? I don't think the ministry knew anything. I think that was from, like, Harry's recollection with the Dementors. I think that was the only time when we found out how that scene went down.
Well, how do you think he remembers those things, Peters? Peters?
Peters?
Mr. Peters? Babies don't remember anything, Peter.
Babies are dumb. They can't tell what order people are dying in. This is why babies are almost never called upon to testify in court.
Almost never. Sometimes they still do.
The original incorrect version of the text is actually kind of interesting because it implies that James was not dead at the moment when Lily sacrificed her life for Harry, and mm-hmm. so someone else came along after Voldemort was defeated and used Voldemort's wand to murder James. Now, who's the only person we know of who was at that scene in the hours after this event occurred who doesn't have a wand? So who really murdered James? I'm accusing Rubius Hagrid in the alternate universe, which is created by the error in the text. In the corrected text, obviously, that's not true. That's ridiculous. But in the original text, AU, Rubius Hagrid killed James Potter.
Well, when Rubius Hagrid got to the scene, wasn't Sirius already there?
Oh.
Or did he meet him at the scene? Oh, I forget exactly what happened there, but I know he got the bite.
Objection! The witness is a baby! We don't give much unsolicited advice on this show, but in this case, we just want to say, once and for all, be a wand maker.
Want to talk about portkey mechanics?
Yes.
In a previous chapter of this novel, entitled The Portkey, Joanne Rowling sets out very specific rules for exactly how a portkey works. You gather around and everyone touches it and waits for the appointed time at which it's activated, and then it takes everyone. And, you know, the reason she establishes the portkey is, I assume, so that she can call it back here, except she does so with completely different rules, and I don't understand why she was so specific about the rules earlier if she was then going to not follow them them here. Because here, it's just, oh, whenever you touch the cup, it takes you.
Well, that's exactly what she did with Priori Incantatum, too.
Did she?
She established a completely different thing that was also called Priori Incantatum at the beginning of the book.
Oh, well, wait, no, what? No. I mean, I think that's different because
when does she establish Priori Incantatum?
When Amos Diggory does it to Harry's wand to find out what Harry's wand has done. That was a fun sentence.
I didn't remember that was the incantation there, just to see.
Right. I think he just uses the incantation Priori Incantatum and he points it at Harry's wand to make it do that. But that's a little different because that's more like Priori Incantatum is a phenomenon.
And then this and is a whole big spiel that includes right, Priori Incantatum.
This is the phenomenon of wands connecting, which leads to Priori Incantatum as just like a phenomenon that is triggered by the wands connecting.
Okay.
Like, I don't think she's breaking pre-established rules here.
Yeah.
What happened here is not very similar to what happened in the earlier chapter where Amos Diggory...
Well, yeah,
it doesn't break previous rules,
it's
though.
I
think that's the same thing where he was revealing what Harry's wand had done previously. And
then right here, they connected with this bright beam and they all lifted up into the...
No, the bright beam had nothing to do with the Priori Incantatum. The bright beam was just the connection, connecting.
And then that led to Priori Incantatum.
Whereas the port key, that's the one that I don't know if I buy. I mean, maybe there's just different types of port keys, but why did she bother giving us such specific information on port key mechanics to then later just like, oh, yep, nope, this other one that's important to the plot later, that one, it just plays by different rules.
She could have sort of explained it away pretty quickly and said, like, there's port keys where you have an object and at a certain time it's going to leave, just like a train at a certain time is going to leave, versus there's also port keys that are just like a car that you take it whenever you want.
Car port keys and train port keys.
Yeah. You know how different modes of transportation are different.
She could have done that, or I mean, I think the simplest solution would have just been to make the way the first port key work different, because like they had the scene where they all gathered around the Minky Old Boot and they were all making sure to touch it at the appointed time. She could have just made it so they all knew that they had to touch it at the same time whenever they wanted, and that would have worked pretty much exactly the same, and it would have made sense.
They're all gathered around that Manky Old Boot and they all manked sure to touch it at the mank time, and they manked it.
They manked it.
I'm fine with port keys as they are.
You're wrong.
Well, aren't you progressive, Mr. Tom?
I think port keys are great.
Port keys are an abomination. They do not deserve all of the rights of flu powder and brooms.
What if the broom is a port key? What then?
Well, that would be kind of cool. That sounds really convenient if you're flying on your broomstick distance.
They could also just fucking apparate while they're on a broom. Same thing.
Not if they're at Hogwarts.
Yeah, Peter, you can't apparate at Hogwarts. Didn't you read Hogwarts History? Man, you could do so much. Could you build a fire in the sky and then connect that to the flu network, and then you could like fly to it with a broom?
Well, I don't know if you could connect it to the network, because you have to get ministry approval to connect to the network.
There's corrupt ministry officials all over the place. Just got nowhere to look.
Does the flu network have wireless networking?
Excuse me?
Does the flu network have wireless networking?
I mean, it's probably wireless, but I think a fireplace is needed.
We could build a really tall one up to the clouds, and you could have a flu network fireplace connected via the cloud.
And this is all because it would just be like real neat if you were like on a thestral and you jumped off the thestral and pulled out your broom and then you apparated on your broom to a port key and you took the port key through the flu network.
Yeah.
Just because it'd be cool. Now, what you do is you have the fire in the back of the Fort Anglia.
That sounds safe.
He's kind of goofy. Oliver. Oliver Ollivander.
Ollie Ollivander.
Ollie Oxen. Vander.
What is that? What is Ollie Ollie Oxen for? It's a thing I shouted as a child and I have no idea why.
I wouldn't look too hard into it. It might be kind of upsetting.
Yeah, we don't need to know the meanings of all the things we shouted when we were children.
Can I say Portis, and I make this bottle a port key, and I make it for like 2 minutes from now, and then I look at my little watch, and then a minute and 50 seconds from now, I go into the next room, and right at 2 minutes, I throw the bottle at Peter, and it hits him, and then he is port keyed away to some graveyard in Scotland. Would that work?
Is it like a scenic graveyard? Would I enjoy it there?
There is a Dark Lord. Well, there will be a Dark Lord shortly, after you aid in his resurrection unwillingly. So, I don't know if you're able to enjoy scenery under duress, but...
There's always time to stop and enjoy the scenery.
Anyway, but can you forcibly... I guess Harry and Cedric were forcibly port keyed.
I mean, I don't see why not. You just have to be touching an object.
Why was it not... Why was is flesh, blood, and bone not called forcibly portkeyed?
For that matter, I think in the end of the fifth book, when we see Dumbledore use portus, it's just like he hands Harry an object and he's like, here, portus. And then Harry leaves. So can I just walk into your room and just like point my wand at your shirt and say portus?
Well, then I would just take my shirt off and, now it's becoming one of the weird fanfics.
If you can make a porky just by saying portus, why don't they use that all the time? You can just portus someone's clothes and transport them anywhere.
You're like, hey, you want to go to breakfast in the Great Hall? Yeah, sure. Instead of walking all the way there, you can just portus.
Because you can use a portkey inside Hogwarts grounds.
Yeah, maybe. Well, no. Yeah, yeah. No, you're totally right. You can.
Because, I mean, the ministry does pass off Cedric Diggory's death as just an accident of the tournament. So it is totally likely that had both of them come back dead, then they would have just said, oh, okay, there was this Triwizard tournament and they're dead. And that would have been it. And no one would have known that Voldemort had been back.
And that's why the port key was a two-way port key. Moody was instructed to make it so that it would transport them to the graveyard and then later it would transport them back when they were corpses.
And Voldemort didn't know, like, he's pretty bad at gauging how long he monologues for. So he didn't want to set up a timed one because he was just like, well, I might be done at midnight. I might be done at one. I don't know. Just like, I'll kill the boy when I want and then I'll make
it. It's good to know your own limitations. I mean, he knew he wouldn't be able to time that right. You got to admire that.
He's just a really charismatic public speaker. He's like Dr. King in that way. He just likes to get in front of an audience and just see what happens.
A lot like Dr. King.
He's a big improviser.
He has the speech he gives. Harry had a dream that I killed Frank Brace.
All the ghostly things are whispering, don't let go. Not whispering. All the ghostly things are yelling at Harry, don't let go.
I think all the ghostly things are whispering. It's much better lyric, though, if you just want to.
All the ghostly things were whispering.
Voldemort's dead victims whispered as they circled the duelers, whispered words of encouragement to Harry, and hissed words Harry couldn't hear to Voldemort.
What were they telling Voldemort? Like,
you douche. I don't like you a lot.
You're fuck you.
You're evil.
You betrayed them.
Fuck you.
I hate you.
Hate you. Hate you, Voldemort. Killed me. Fucking, hate you.
Wish you would fucking just die again. More, though. Actually die.
I feel like just in terms of Harry Potter's relatability as a good protagonist to us, to a bunch of muggle children who can't do magic, I feel like this like sort of helps that a lot almost, in that if Harry Potter's skill was in the vein of Hermione's skill, where like he was just super clever and had everything memorized, that wouldn't feel nearly as cool as just like the fact that Harry Potter doesn't know what he's doing half the time. Harry Potter's most impressive things just seem to be these like sheer acts of just like will and intuition where he's just like, I gotta try really hard at this. That feels right when you're 10 and reading about how magic works.
Yeah, and he's courageous, and that's also very important. Like, literally, that's part of why he doesn't die right here is because he decides, just like his mother before him and his father, though that didn't really help. Sorry, James. Your sacrifice was just kind of there. He decides that he's going to stand up like a man and face Voldemort himself, even though he's just sure he's about to be murdered. And because of that, that's why his wand, you know, he casts the Expelliarmus and it connects with Voldemort's. And if he had said, it doesn't matter, I'll just sit here, wouldn't have turned out as well.
Probably not.
Though maybe it would have. I don't know.
That's a real question I actually have, though. How would that have turned out? Suppose Harry Potter, maybe he did try to fight, but for whatever reason, the timing was wrong, and he just got hit with a Vada Kedavra. What would have happened? Because that does happen in the seventh book, and he manages to live. Assumedly, the Horcrux would have been destroyed in Harry Potter, but would he still have had the option to come back and live again? And who would he have met in King's Cross Station? Because Dumbledore isn't dead yet.
All good questions.
Part of the reason that he dies and then is resurrected is that he does like present himself like in that situation. That's another like big sacrificial moment where he's like, oh, okay, I have to die because I have the Horcrux in me. Whereas if like in this instance, if he had been trying to fight, then I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe that wouldn't be the same thing. Maybe he would have just died because he wasn't like presenting himself as a sacrifice like his mom did.
Right.
We don't really know.
I guess to fully unbag this question, we would have to know like exactly why it is that he lives in the seventh book. And we haven't gotten there to discuss that yet. And I don't think there is an in-canon answer for exactly why that is either. So we don't know.
Though Dumbledore does, or King's Cross Dumbledore tells Harry that part of the reason why that was a thing was because Voldemort took his blood, which just happened. So if that's a big part of that, then maybe he would have just died and then not died.
Just gotten right back up.
In the seventh book, though, when that happens, Harry, at that point, he fake dies, and then he's back. He tells Narcissa that he's dead.
He doesn't tell Narcissa he's dead.
Hey, hey, Narcissa, I'm dead.
Oh, zombie!
He makes a secret pact with Narcissa to pretend that he's dead. Just between the two of them. And that gives them the upper hand a couple minutes later. Whereas right here, if like something weird happens, Harry almost dies, comes back, then Voldemort's just like, is he dead? And then like...
We'll try again.
Yeah. Lucius goes over and touches him. He's like, no, he's not dead. Would Voldemort just be like, Avada Kedavra again. That's where you were. That's where you got food when you were a pre-baby.
Should we stop recording?
No, this is good.
This is really good stuff, Peter. That's where you got food when you were a pre-baby. So maybe it's like, you know, you're
a pre-baby.
So you were you're looking. It's like regretting things and looking at your past and wishing the past was not over. Alas.